One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for each and every one of you. Hallie, I don't know, how are you?
Well, I think the issue is right now is like, personally, I'm okay and happy to be alive. And I'm just feeling very grateful. I'm trying to practice gratitude, which I think is... been very helpful. The thing I do want to talk about is how we're just deporting people based on, at least in the case of these Venezuelan men who have been sent to a El Salvadorian mega prison. And ostensibly the people who are being sent to Gitmo is that there's no due process, right? And it sucks that like we are in what they call a constitutional crisis. And basically what that means is that there is an agreement.
Not according to Chuck Schumer.
Well, he was alluding to it, like, we're almost there, but like, Chuck, babe, I got a bad news.
We're there.
Yeah, and so this is unfortunately what I think everyone was concerned about was that Donald Trump and his administration, and of course Elon Musk and everyone involved, they do not care about the Constitution or the functioning of the U.S. government in any way, which we know, right? Even Chuck Schumer said, we're recording this on Friday, March 21st. He said it yesterday that it's a constitutional crisis. So seems like even Schumer, and I understand, I'm sure to work in the government and see this happening, there is a level of disbelief that we don't have.
Yes.
Like, it's like, we've been a party to this insanity. When you work there, you think, you probably have the illusion of control a lot longer than us. So, and again, not that they should have fought them on the, the budget bill, but like, at a certain point, I am empathetic to Democrats in office. It's just that we here at home have to be like, so what that basically means is that the Trump administration does not listen to the judiciary, right? And so due process has started to break down. These guys, these Venezuelan guys, were deported, and what they're sort of identifying them based on their tattoos, which they claim are gang tattoos, and some social media posts. Of course, even if that was true, which it doesn't seem like it is from at least the information that the Trump administration has made public, they are afforded a trial, right? And that this is something that the Supreme Court, the head of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, sort of issued a rebuke of Trump, saying like, this is something that has existed for 200 years. You cannot threaten to impeach the federal judges who keep trying to stop him from doing all this stuff. Like, he basically threatened to impeach one of the judges who said you can't be flying just planefuls of immigrants out of the country to other prisons in other countries. And what sucks about all this is that this does, like, we are just sort of a chess game that Donald Trump is playing with the other leaders, like, globally, right? Like, he's friends with Putin. That could change on a dime. Like, you know, and, like, one of the guys who got deported was a Venezuelan soccer player. And, again, this is all allegedly. This is based on available information. But, like, he protested against the authoritarian head of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro. So he actually had already been in Venezuela. That's why he sought asylum. He has sought it legally in the United States. Like, he is here under a legal asylum, you know, I don't know what you call it, dispensation. Like, he's allowed to be here. And I just feel so bad for that guy. And also, like, it's all going to, like, fall to any kind of activist, right? Like, I'm not saying that's why this guy was targeted. It could be that he was just rounded up with these other Venezuela guys, but it does feel exactly. And I think it's like they're happy to do that, but also I do feel like this is going to fall to people who, like, if you have stuck your head up and then you try to come to America to seek asylum, well, they don't want you here because they know you're willing to stick your head up in other countries. You're going to stick your head up here. We're going to go ahead and get you out of here. And if we scoop up a bunch of other people who have done truly nothing and are just here trying to seek asylum or, you know, again, like, there's so many statuses that, like, again, as, like, someone who was born here, I'm not even familiar with, that I've had to, like, learn, like, how people apply. But, like, there's a lot of different interim statuses where people are allowed to be here. They're waiting their hearings, that kind of thing. And then I saw this post today where, like, Maduro's mad and he's, like, basically demanding, like, the Venezuelan migrants back. And I'm like, this guy's in America because he protested your government. Now our government is targeting him and you're demanding him back. And that's what I mean. Like, we're just like little, we're chess pieces. Like, he doesn't actually give a fuck about these guys, obviously, but neither do we, right? So it's like, oh, great. I'm glad that another, you know, a Trump-esque figure has to demand these people back. But also, I guess somebody has to. So I think it's just like watching this and understanding that we are all chess pieces. I guess at this point, like, the only thing we could sort of do is be honest about that, which is why the Chuck Schumer thing was frustrating. But, like, I guess even he's, like, recognizing it now, where it's like, let's just call a spade a spade. Let's just, everything we see, we can just tell each other what we're seeing, right?
Right.
So that's where I'm at. How you doing?
Yeah. I'm, you know, I'm that stuff. And then also the dismantling of the Department of Education is so terrifying. And I don't know if an executive order can eliminate an entire government department. But I, like, the number of people who are adults who have come through our education system who do not have the skills to read and understand media at this point is so scary, and part of why we're here. And without actual reading comprehension, and it is just like, my mother was an educator, like, it is just like one of those things where I'm like, oh, well, no one really knows what goes on inside schools except for educators. And if we don't have the Department of Education also, like, helps, like, with, like, kids getting free lunches and there's obviously, like, economic and, like, human life repercussions outside of, are you getting an education in America? And it's just like, I don't know. He's been threatening it for so long. And if it really happens, it is, like, a very, like, scary, but also just, like, sad. Like, I'm just very sad that being educated, being smart, being informed, being curious in a real way, not in a I'm just asking questions way. Right. Like, all of those things are not only, like not considered valuable, but they're being considered, like, bad in our culture, like, both, like, from the government and also just, like, culturally broadly. That's, like how people are beginning to think. And, like, I don't know. I always thought that, like, there were so many smart, cool people in America. We've made so much cool stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, like, sad to think that, like, this is, I mean, it has been the beginning of the end, because, like, the most popular things we make now are just, like, white men on podcasts screaming about, you know, immigrants. But it is just, like, and calling it comedy. But it's, like, it is just, like, I don't know, there's something about it that, like, you know, whatever constitutionally or, like, governmentally is happening with it, it makes me just, like, depressed.
Yeah. I think that, again, like, as two white women who are screaming on a microphone about immigrants, I think that it's helpful for all of us to understand, and maybe this is going to sound harsh, but I think anyone listening will know what I mean. It's, like, that America is a lie. It's just sort of like, what is the lie that we're telling ourselves? And I think there's a positive aspect to America, which is that, like, do we really believe in, you know, like, let's say education, like, we believe in good public education, like, that's a, like, that is a, you know, sort of like, I think of, like, conservatives, like, facts don't care about your feelings. Their right. feelings are dictating the facts of our lives, and that's their entire plan as conservatives. But it's like, if we believe in these institutions, then we create them and perpetuate them. And what we're seeing now is, like, these people don't care, so they don't, like, that we have to live under their lie, right? Like, that they think, oh, they're lying to themselves and to us, like, oh, education should be, in I think, a lot of
privatized for rich white people.
Yeah,
and
privatized,
unavailable to everyone else.
And in this country, specifically, white Christian, and, like, a lot of these private, you know, sort of the vouchers that, you know, for example, Greg Abbott was pushing is specifically to get funding into white Christian schools, and then fuck everybody else, right? And I think that this is, I think to your point, it's so depressing to see the reality, which is that these people don't care. And then the question of, like, so how do you have a government or a country with people who genuinely could give a fuck about most people? I don't know. But
that stuff's been hard. Like, that's been, like, obviously, like, the specifics of the news every day is awful, but just, like, the larger, like, oh, just no one, people don't care about other people. Yeah. People don't care about, like, the institute, like, even just, like, the, again, like, being curious, being thoughtful, being, you know, willing to be wrong, like, all of the things that kind of make being a human exciting. And you know, those things are just, like, no longer a part of, like, the ruling class of our country. And were they ever? I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say there was ever a time where, like, that was amazing, but it certainly used to be better.
Yeah, it just felt like we were, and again, like, to your point, like, perhaps it was an illusion that, you know, we were a party to. Right. But it's like, yeah, it felt like that we were moving in the right direction. And, you know, I don't know. I saw a TikTok, and I think this is a fair point. This one was just sort of saying, like, this is all happening because we were making progress. Right. Like, the idea that this is means that none of it meant anything. It's like, no, they had to do this. Like, they have to push trans people and queer people out of public life because we were living in public life. Like, they have to punish people for, I mean, essentially having, like, a secular education, because people are leaving the churches. Yeah. Like, people are trying to figure out, like, how do we have a society that isn't, like, okay, everyone has to be the same religion and the same race. Right. And that's why they're pushing back so hard on this, which I think is, like, good for us to keep in mind, is, like, this is all happening because they're fucking losers, and they will every time this has happened in history, they've lost because they don't actually have the ability to build a better world. They don't actually have ideas to, like, you know, make things better. And I, you know, in my mind, it's like, and then seeing Elon Musk being like, I'm going to dismantle all this. And then the Secretary of Commerce, Howard Lutnick, going on Fox News and literally telling people to buy Tesla stock.
Insane.
And I just think, like, again, like, with conservatives, like, is this what you wanted? You want forever. America is just, like, it's a business. It's, like, the most, like, raw version of capitalism. Like, the only way I could see them wanting that is, like, you think it's punishing us, but it's like, baby, you're in here too.
Yeah.
It's your water too. It's your schools too.
Right.
And that's the part that I guess maybe I find depressing. It's like, but this is your stuff too. Do you not want the stuff?
That's the thing that feels so, like, existentially strange and confusing. I'm like, but, like, don't you want there to be food?
Like, where, like, do you, like, don't you want a stable world in which, like, children can be safe? And I guess that they think, like, well, yeah, we'll deport these, like, couple dozen Venezuelan alleged gang members, and that's the world. Like,
I don't know.
It's feels such of the past
that
it's remarkable that people anyone could believe in it. But I do feel like, at least, like, I think it's helpful for us to talk about it. And at the end of the day, I don't think they got the juice.
No.
I really don't. I think long term they don't got it. And we're just going to have to, I would say this is a time where people, like, get to know that your neighbors in your building and your block. Because, like, what's going to happen is, seems, again, from just someone who has to read the news all the time, it's like, all this federal government shit is going to fall to us.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, it's not that, like, we're going to lose something automatically or right away. It's going to be, okay, there's a, you know, a weather event.
Yes.
And they can't come and help you. Or, like, that, like, no, there's no money to get the trees off the
right.
road. It's going to be
community,
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which also, like, poor people and people who live in, like, you know, I think of like New Orleans right. after Katrina. It's like nobody came and helped. Like, so you have to help each yeah. other. And that is the template we have to be using. It's like, no, just know everybody around yep. you. And then when things happen, like when the fires happened, like I communicated with all my neighbors just to check in. Yeah. I know one of them has a kid. So it's sort of like, it's going to be that kind yeah. of stuff. And that's a good place to yep. start. And then just knowing that even those some those people are going to be people who voted for Trump, and then you could have conversations with them and be like, so I don't think, you know, yeah. what do you think about all this? And
no
like,
FEMA.
I do think yeah. there's some people who, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I have faith in the individual, if not the group right now. And I think we could, you know, yeah. definitely talk to one another. But not to talk about this forever, because we certainly could.
We could. Hey guys, just popping in to tell you that, of course, we have another live show as we do every month, and it is going to be Sunday, April 27th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, and we are going to be ruining Drop.
I'm excited. It is apparently based on a true story of a woman who mysteriously starts getting dropped photos to her phone. Terrified, could happen to any of us. And it stars Megan Fahey from White Lotus and a million other great shows. And I'm glad that she's moving yes. into the horror thriller space.
Yes, we're so excited. And you should be too. This movie's going to be hot as hell. And we're going to be ruining it as we always do with like the chat, with drinking games, with, you know, whatever else we do when we do a live show. So join us Sunday, April 27th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Get your tickets for $10 at now a new. It's going to be a little different because we're doing it a little bit different. Go to patreon.com/ruinedpodcast. You'll be able to get your tickets there just like regular. It's nothing different. It's still going to be the same kind of like fun, even better, I think. But it'll be patreon.com/ruinedpodcast.
And then if you're one of our $20 Patreon tier members, our VIPs, all you'll have to do in this new process is just log on at Showtime and the show will be available to stream for free in Patreon. You'll be good to go. So please join us. We're excited to see you drop by. And until then, please keep it spooky.
Keep it spooky.
Let us get to the reason you came. We're going to ruin
yes.
a movie. And the movie we're going to ruin for Oscar Winners Month is
yes.
Halle Berry's The Call, which is a movie I never heard of before. Who recommended it? Did you recommend it?
I can't remember. Maybe it was Sabrina?
Yeah.
Somebody recommended it. I definitely remember like the part of the trailer I saw. I was like, oh, I remember seeing an ad for this, but I couldn't place in time when that might have been and what I thought about it.
I also want to say I'm a huge Halle Berry fan. I've always felt connected to her as a Halle.
Oh yeah,
and she's always been someone that I could reference how she spells her name is the same as mine.
Oh, that's so helpful.
And Halle Berry's a great actress. She went from Monsters Ball, and I feel like she's had a career where it's like I do wish more for her. And also, she was great in this movie, which is I think more of like a crime thriller than a horror movie for sure. And Allison, we always had Allison watch the trailer, but this time I asked her, Allison, do not watch the full trailer. You're only allowed to watch the first 30 seconds because they show the whole damn movie. And there is like a fun thing that happens in the third act that I didn't want you to see because
okay.
then it's like, oh, you've literally seen the entire thing.
Right.
Allison, what did you think about the first 30 seconds of the trailer for The Call?
I mean, gripping. Yes, it does feel more like a thriller than horror,
yeah.
but like also scary. Still, I'm still scared for the kidnapped girl. Also, like, what year was this from?
2013, but it does feel like it could be from any year. Like,
it could
very
be from,
out of time.
1996.
To me. Yes,
like,
absolutely.
It really, like, her getting thrown in the trunk and then, like, call, like, it just gave me, like, Oprah having on a safety expert being like, kick out the taillight if you're ever in someone's trunk and like all the like just giving advice. I mean, I'm like, great premise. I'm excited. Halle, I mean, I hope she gets to what a dream as an actress to get to sit
yes.
for most what I assume is most of the movie.
That's a really good point. A lot of it's shot in a 911 call center. So
yes.
a lot of it is her like reacting to like phone calls.
Yeah.
Which is
like
why she's great at it. Yeah.
Like her acting is what we're doing right. We're just sitting in chairs looking at computers.
Yeah. And she's crushing it. I just want to say this was directed by Brad Anderson, written by Richard Day Oviedo. And Brad Anderson is the director of, amongst other movies, Session 9, which is a horror movie we did, which is scary as hell. That's a great one. He also directed The Machinist, which with Christian Bale. I never saw that one, but it's obviously a great filmmaker.
Very affecting.
Happy to see him and his work. We always like to take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary would you find being a 911 operator?
Oh my God. Just like having to answer that many phone calls.
That is a skill. We could not do this. I'll tell you right now. I would be sobbing the entire time.
I'll be honest.
I would be screaming. I'd be throwing up.
I love making a phone call. I literally crumble receiving one.
100%. It's one of our many weaknesses.
I love calling my friends randomly in the middle of the day. I will call a restaurant to try and make a reservation. Like, I'll get on the phone. But if you call me, I have started crying. Like,
also, imagine every phone call is somebody being pinned under the wreckage of their car, like the being assaulted. Like, it's like every phone call is not simply just a phone call from your bank or what have you, or to let you know that your identity's been stolen again. It is, in fact, someone seeking help from you, Allison,
I guess,
in
like
the worst moments of their life.
We are also we're not good in a crisis. Like, I'm not going to have like a solution for you. No matter how much they like train you to be like, here's what you do, I would still just be like, I'd be screaming back like, oh my God, we're
gonna die. No, I'm so sorry. That sucks.
Fuck, what are you gonna do?
Like, what are they called? Escape rooms are a good litmus test of how you'll be in a crisis.
Oh, yeah.
And one, I'm a very good listener and follower. So if I need basically someone, usually a lesbian, to tell me what to do. Yeah. And then also I could do one thing. So I think for me, it's like, I probably wouldn't be good as an operator, but boy, I could probably do the front desk, or I could be the office manager. I could help the people who are doing the work. Yes. I could be a support staff,
keep
but
things
not
organized.
The person. Exactly. So I think I could be helpful in a crisis. But somebody else, I beg you to take control of the situation. Absolutely. We also have some other fun. We have Morris Chestnut's in here. Michael Imperioli. Always love to see him. So
love.
A lot of other character actors and actresses that, again, I'm glad they're getting work. Nice to see you. And then finally, Allison, would you like to guess the twist in The Call?
Guess the twist.
Based on only seeing the first part of the trailer, I'm going to guess that the guy comes to the 911 call center.
Ooh.
Like, he brings the girl there because she's someone who works there, his daughter. And it's like a ransom, not ransom, I guess, if they show up, but like
whatever that
motivation would be. Yes.
Yeah, it escalated. Yeah, I will say the gentleman who's doing the evil deed in this, his motivation seems to be, I'm insane. So
do
sort of find out something sort of about him, like why he is targeting the young women he targets. But the answer is it's almost like an episode of like Hannibal or CSI versus something more horror, where it's just sort of like, it's like, oh, he's just a completely insane person who is now, unfortunately, has been interacting with Halle Berry, and she's gonna have to do something about it.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
So let us begin ruining The Call. We open on, of course, Allison, a phone ringing and a voice picking up 911. What's your emergency? And we zoom over Los Angeles. So this all takes place in like Los Angeles County, and they're downtown. And so we have these like great shots of the skyline, the hustle and bustle. And we hear like all these different operators in the 911 call center, because they all sit together, which I want to talk about in a minute, because like, as somebody who works in an open plan office, this is my nightmare.
It is insane.
I was like, you must have like sound, like your headset must be sound canceling, because they're all answering calls in the round. Basically, there's at least a dozen people in the room constantly on the phone. I would drive me insane.
I would also get so distracted. I would not be responding to the person talking to me. I'd be like listening to what somebody else is doing.
And again, that's why I think this is a really particular skill set, because like not only are they answering these calls, but like when the call's over, they're interacting with their coworkers, they're getting coffee. Like it's a normal office. And also when you pick up the phone, somebody's dying every time, right? Speaking of, we hear like recordings of like some of the worst shit imaginable. I'm watching a woman stab herself and a child. My girlfriend just jumped off a 12-story balcony. I just hit someone with my car and I think they're dead. I just shot my wife. My wife and I are overdosing. Something is wrong with the baby. So just like, I was just like, no, like immediately terrified, immediately awful.
That could be the whole movie. And I'd be like, that's the scariest thing we've ever done.
And I thought it was really good because it's sort of like overlapping. It becomes this like rising cacophony. And it really is like, it did get my heart rate up. I'm like, oh, that's Brad Anderson. Well done. Title card, The Call. So we open on the room full of 911 operators, which they call the Hive, which makes sense because it's like we're all worker bees. And also it's definitely loud. Like there's like a hum where everyone's like answering. And I also did the worst possible job for an open floor plan with just sound bouncing off the walls every day. And we see all the operators very competent, calming the callers down, logging their details into the system. And then they can switch over to talk to the police if they have to. So like they, you know, take a call, log the system, you know, automatically call up police and firefighters, then they'll switch over and tell them like, here's what I've been told, then switch back to the person. So it's all automated and they sort of have control in their own little like cubicle basically. And we meet our protagonist Jordan, played by Halle Berry, and they do this with her every time, where Halle Berry is such a stunningly beautiful woman. Insane. I'm not the first person to say it. So they gave her like a normal woman's haircut or wig in this case. But in fact, it only highlights how beautiful she is.
How perfect her face is.
And it's sort of like a 90s sort of like upside down triangle of like curls, which again, if you or I were to have that, it'd be like, oh, well, that woman has made a terrible mistake about her
something's gone
style.
Wrong.
When she looks like a supermodel. Again, like just like it highlights how stunning she is.
You cannot ugly like Halle Berry. Like you can't, there's nothing, like even if you put a bag over her head, it's like, okay, but the body, like it's like.
Right, it's only going to highlight the body. And that is how I feel about a short hair in general. If you can pull off a short haircut, that automatically makes you the most beautiful woman in the world to me.
Agreed.
Or man, really. Like it's like if your haircut, like you pull it off.
Yes.
Because I fantasize about having a short haircut. I don't have the jaw for it. I don't like my face is round and that's fine. I accept that. But I dream of a day where I could have short hair. You know what I mean? God, and when we get our new faces, then that's what I'm going to order. Allison, Jordan answers a call and a man says, I think a burglar's breaking into the house next to mine. The address is 18 Baxter. And we sort of see her start logging the information. We see another call. She's talking to someone named Chris who has a gun and is possibly suicidal. She's able to sort of talk him off the ledge. The call cuts off though. So that's the thing is they all complain about is like when the call ends, you don't know what happens. And I think for a lot of people, that's sort of the distressing part of it. She gets a call. It's this guy Terrence who's in prison and always calls them. And she and her like across the way, their cubicle mate Flora, they sort of roll their eyes because Terrence calls them all the time just to sort of be like, I need to talk to someone not in prison. And also he's like, you know what I mean? So they have sort of banter, like, you know, you can't call here, but we hope you're okay. Bye, Terrence. And all of the operators have a light pull on their cubicle. So green, it's like a traffic light. So green means they're available for a call and the next call rolls to them. Yellow, they're on the phone and they're talking to someone and taking information. And then some cases, like with Terrence, that it doesn't go to a red because it's not an emergency.
Okay.
So like, and they talk about like, you know, on Thanksgiving, whenever people get drunk, basically people just call like on Thanksgiving, people call them accidentally instead of like the turkey hotline.
Oh, sure.
So like they get a lot of calls that are like accidental dials or kids calling or whatever that aren't emergencies. But if it does, we roll up to red. So anytime anyone's handling an actual emergency, there's a red light above them, basically. And they sort of chat about their lives. And Jordan's boyfriend, Officer Paul Phillips, played by Morris Chestnut, again, incredibly beautiful man. Stops by for a quick smooch and she's like, oh, my boss is on the floor. And she sees her boss, Maddie, who's sort of the manager, like watching everybody. And we see Paul and his partner, Officer Jake Devon. They talked about they were called to a scene and they delivered a baby. And it went really well. And I guess Jake was trying to get a date with one of Jordan's friends. And she's like, I'm sorry, she doesn't date cops. And Flora's like, well, you know, I date cops. I don't know whether you'd be interested in dating me. We're all having fun banter. And then Jordan and Paul go up to the roof on her break and just make out for 15 minutes, which sounds great.
Yeah.
And she says, well, what time does your shift start tomorrow? He says, well, it's at 6 a.m. Why? And she's like, would you want to ride in together? And this is sort of her invitation. Like, would you like to spend the night at my place? So sort of like, I'm escalating our relationship. He said, I absolutely do want to do that. And I will make coffee in the morning. So, okay, everything seems to be going well. We see Jordan walk past her desk. We see one of her co-workers, Marco. And he's like, ooh, when did you start dating Phillips? Like, tell me all about it. He's so cute. And, you know, she's like, I'm sorry you lost your chance. We see that there's like a bunch of trainees. So like at the same time, there's the operators, there's like trainees that are, which I imagine like that's a intensive process.
Yes.
And so trainees like talks to Jordan, like, what's the code for a multiple stabbing? She knows it off the top of her head. Allison Jordan comes back for a break, puts in her headset and answers the next call. 901, what's your emergency? And it's a young woman sobbing. And she tells Jordan, a man is trying to break into my house. I am all alone. My parents are out and I don't know what to do. Jordan says, can you get out of the house? Is there another door you could run out of? And she says, no, he's coming through the front door. I don't know what to do. Her name is Leia. We see Jordan call the cops, which is over, and says there's a hot prowl and sends them over. The cops speed over to try to help her. Jordan tells Leia, I have information, help us on the way, just stay on the phone call, and tries to keep her calm. And we hear a window shatter. And of course, Leia starts panicking. He's in the house. Jordan says, go upstairs, find a bedroom, lock yourself in, or the bathroom, like lock yourself into a room. Unfortunately, Leia runs upstairs and the bedroom door will not lock.
Oh, God.
And we see the prowler start climbing the stairs after her. So this is not just a burglar. This is not a robbery. This person is trying to get this girl. Yeah. Exactly. And Jordan says, is there a window in the room? And Leia says, yes. When the prowler enters the bedroom, he checks if the windows are closed. He checks the closet. He can't find her. He then goes into what looks like a teen girl's room. We presume that this is Leia's room. And the window is ajar. We see him run out, run down the stairs. And we see that Leia is hiding under the bed on the phone.
Oh, God.
And Leia says, I think it works. I could hear him going back down the stairs. Allison, just then the call drops. And Jordan calls her back.
No! Which, like, yeah, right. Like,
Yeah. But I just feel like in that situation, like, I don't know the protocol. We sort of discussed this afterwards, obviously. But it's like, ooh, girl, you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Because, of course, the phone rings, alerting the prowler to Leia's location. She starts sobbing. I think he heard the phone ring. Of course, he did. He drags her out from under the bed. And Jordan has to listen as the prowler, like, basically slaps the phone out of this girl's hands and then grabs it and starts breathing into it. And Jordan tells this man, whoever this is, the police will be there any second. Do not hurt this girl. I suggest you just leave the house before you do anything you regret. And the man tells Jordan, it's already done. And the phone disconnects. And of course, Jordan, like, realizes how badly she fucked up. She runs out. They sort of have like a decompression room, like a break room. She runs there. She's hyperventilating. And her boss, Maddie, comes in and is like, yeah, you fucked up. You're not supposed to call back. And he says, like, what are you thinking? Like, you're such a pro. And, you know, it's like, give me an explanation because I'm going to have to tell my bosses.
Yeah.
And Jordan says, I don't know. Basically, there is no reason. Like, she just did it without thinking.
Right.
And now blames herself, and I think at least partially reasonably, for this. There wasn't a reason. And that there's something that is terrifying about that to me, again, as someone with ADHD, where it's like, yeah, I could do something without thinking, and in that moment doom this girl. Unfortunately, Allison, back at the house, we see Leia's face, and she's panicking. She's pinned to the ground, and we see the man's hand on her throat. And we see the man's mouth open and blood dumps out. Of course, Jordan sits up. She's in bed. She's asleep. And Paul is knocking on the door. Paul's obviously heard. He's like telling her, like, please let me in. I understand. I'm so sorry this happened to you. Like, let me just talk. She doesn't let him in. So, of course, I think that's the thing. It's like, she's not going to let anybody in. You know, she's made this thing. She's going to push all these people who are in her life away. The next day, she's on her way to work and she hears a news report about the girl, Allison. She's been abducted. Her name is Leia Templeton. So not just killed by this man, he has taken her. and she's been abducted by her home in Hancock Park last night. The lack of evidence is frustrating the investigation. Allison Jordan walks in. Everyone is staring at her. Everyone knows about this. Everyone's seen the news. The news has, everyone sure. is like, some people are very nice. Some people are very judgmental. Right. And some people are like, thank God it wasn't me, you know? And so again, Halle Berry's a great actress. So like Jordan basically just has to sit down to do her job the next day. Aww. And it just has like tears in her eyes. She answers the phone. A woman's scream rips through the phone. And she says, there's, God help us, there's a bat in my daughter's room.
Sure.
So again, you know, put in a request for animal control. Nothing so terrible. The next call's Terrence again, the prisoner. And she tries to like turn to smile at Flora like, oh, it's Terrence. Flora is standing up looking at the news. They have like the news on a big screen, which again also feels like you shouldn't do. Like you just shouldn't have the news on at the 911 operator pin.
No. Let everybody focus on like what they're doing.
Allison, it's a helicopter, news helicopter over a field, and the police are pulling Leah Thompson's nude corpse. It's pixelated. Ugh. They're dragging her nude corpse out of a shallow grave. So Leah has been murdered by this man. And of course, Jordan goes up to the roof and Paul finds her there. And he's like, look, and basically he's like, I completely understand, but if it helps, like you've had bad calls before, this place can't run without you, this is just sort of like part of the job, is like it's horrible, but like you didn't kill that girl, like this is you could blame yourself, but only so much, you know. And Jordan's father is a police officer, and he says, my dad told me the hardest thing about being a cop is knowing that you might be the difference between someone living and somebody dying, and when you can't shoulder that, you need to get out. And Paul's like, dude, is that what you're going to do? Like, do you feel like you have to quit? And she doesn't know. He says, well, just, I'll be here when you need me. Please let me know, like, how you're doing. And so, again, like, she's sort of overwhelmed by the cacophony of the overlapping 911 calls. Allison, at the same time, we see two teen girls shopping at a huge mall, which, like, exists in L.A., but not downtown. Like, I feel like they're in a place where it's like, you know, they could be at the Americana, the Grove, but they're in a mall in the L.A. area. Yeah. And they're Autumn and Casey. Casey's played by Abigail Breslin. Nice to see her.
Oh, love that.
And Casey started the goody two shoes. So Autumn's like, I dare you to call me a bitch. And she's like, I'm not going to do that. She's an innocent. She's sort of like the younger of the two. Autumn, we find out, has a prepaid phone call from her older boyfriend. So they both have their regular cell phones, but then her boyfriend gave her a phone so that her parents can't see their calls. I'm like, well, that's not good. That guy has planned this out too much, right?
Mm, yeah.
And also, that's a complete aside. It has nothing to do with what's going to happen. It was just like a moment I'm like, oh, I'd be very worried if my teenage daughter had a prepaid phone call from an older man. Back at work, we see Jordan takes what I presume is like anti-anxiety medication in the bathroom. Her wig has never looked better. And we see in her locker, she has put up a newspaper clipping about Leia's death. Again, don't do that, but I, you know.
Like, I get that it's like, it's a reminder, like, don't make mistakes, but also it's like a pretty harrowing reminder to have to confront every day.
Exactly. We see that she is not on the floor. She is giving a presentation to the trainees, and we find out that it's 6 months later. So time has passed, but she's basically like, I'm not going to be taking calls, but I can at least start training the trainees. So they've moved her over there, and she's walking all the trainees through the sort of what they call the hive. And, you know, sort of all these different things, like sort of they can track calls based on, like, there's more calls when there's hotter temperatures. Like, people are more likely to get into physical altercations when it's hot out.
Yes.
You know, rainy days and Christmas, that's when you're going to get the suicide calls, right? So it's sort of like depending, you could sort of track where the calls are based on the seasons and stuff. She's like, Saturday mornings are the slowest time. People are recovering from Friday nights. And one of them goes, what happens on Friday? And she turns and says, all hell breaks loose. And that is, I think you can see that. I feel like I can see that right now in LA where it's like, it's the end of the work week. Everyone is like, so much pent up stuff, and they go out and get fucking drunk. Yeah. So it's like some people are calling. It's like accidental calls, like, oh, I'm drunk and I can't get home, or like whatever. And some of them are like bar fights, car accidents,
all that stuff,
all sorts of horrible shit. And she shows them the quiet room where you can decompress after a hard call. But we also have a behavioral science specialist, Dr. Keating, who's on call 24/7. So if you need to call to talk. And one of the guys says, to talk about what? And they all look at him, and she's like, you know, the most important thing at this job is do what you can to stay emotionally detached. Do not get too involved in your PR's crisis. They say, what's PR? And the PR is means person reporting. So the person calling, they call it PR. And she says, and whatever you do, don't make promises to them because you can't keep them. You don't know what's going to happen. So, you know, don't tell, say like, I promise you're going to be fine. You have no idea. Yeah. So just don't do that. She takes him down to the call floor. She says, you know, we basically collect the calls and we send out police and fire departments. So we're sort of the in between. So the hive goes down, the whole city goes dark. And we find out they called the hive because listen to all those worker bees. At the mall, we see Autumn and Casey eating at the food court. And Autumn's like, oh my God, you should talk to Max. He totally wants to bone you. And Casey's like, ew. You know, they're sort of arguing about it. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know, you're not my matchmaker. You'd have to set me up. Autumn gets a text. She's 20 minutes late to pick up her younger brother. She says, fuck, I gotta go. And leaves Casey there to like clean up, basically. But when Autumn goes, she leaves her prepaid cell phone from her boyfriend on the table. So Casey just pockets it. She has a regular cell phone, obviously, and heads to the parking garage to drive home. And while Casey's walking to her car, she gets a call from her mom. She's like, I know, I'm coming back. I'm just hanging out with Autumn. You don't have to freak out. I'm literally walking to my car right now. Allison, a red car, backs up directly in front of Casey. And she's like, Mom, hang on. And she hangs up. Unfortunately, the guy leaps out of the car to apologize. And when he leaps out, Casey sort of fumbles and drops her actual cell phone.
Oh, no.
And when she bends to pick it up, he grabs her from behind and puts a cloth, obviously soaked in chloroform, over her face. Allison, Casey is being abducted. Back in the hive, we see Jordan introduce them to Brooke, who's like a relatively, she's been there for 6 months, started probably when Jordan stepped away. And she says, this is a very rewarding job, but this is the hardest job that I've ever had. Yeah. And they say, well, what's the hardest part? You know, like just knowing what to do. And she says, no, it's the not knowing. Like when police or fire arrive, the call ends and you don't know, did they survive? Like what happened to them? And I really struggle with that. And Jordan says, yeah, that's hard. Any other questions? And one of the guys says, well, I have one. Why aren't you on the floor? Like, why don't you take calls? And she says, because I'm the teacher. Allison, when Casey wakes up, she is unfortunately in the trunk of the red car. And the driver, the man who has kidnapped her, is blasting the song, Putting on the Ritz, deafeningly loudly. Allison, what would you do?
What would you do?
Man, am I Casey?
I think let's go Casey for now.
And then...
And we could maybe do a little Jordan later.
Yeah. I would, you know, take my Oprah lesson and, like, kick out that taillight. I would bang and make a lot of noise. I guess anything to, like, let anyone that's around the car know I'm in the trunk. Which is, like, I think... But you're at least at one point, that was what you were supposed to do if you were ever abducted and put in a trunk. It's like you got to be able to tell people that you're in the trunk. Because if somebody's driving on a highway and you like stick your foot out of the taillight, people will be like, oh, something's going on in that car and perhaps we should call it in.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of like of all the, it's just so funny where it's like, I feel like maybe this is just like being like young white women where it's like, I feel like we had so much instruction about this and not instructions about like how to make the world not fucked up. But like, I do remember it's like, once you're already in the car, you kind of have nothing to lose. Like you're already being taken to a second location by a stranger. Yes. You're in the trunk of a car. Go all out. Do piss and shit, vomit, punch out everything, just do whatever you can. If there's anything in the trunk, like use it to smash out the lights, try to go crawl into the back seat if you can pull the seat down, and then like have this guy deal with you, like to immediately become a problem because it's already too late. Like it's too late. So go
you
nuts.
You can't prevent anything at this point. It's like, already happened. Whatever they're going to do to you, they're going to do to you. So just try and get in the way of that as much as you can and let other people know that you're there. So I guess that's what I would do.
Exactly. And I think that's all you can do. Fortunately, Allison, she does that. She starts screaming and the guy doesn't hear her because he's driving on the highway, putting on the Ritz at ear splitting levels. Allison, she realizes that she has the prepaid cell phone from Autumn's boyfriend, and Autumn's boyfriend's name is Raul, and I'm like, if I found an adult man gave my name Raul, gave my daughter a prepaid cell phone, but that's another movie for sure. She calls 911 immediately, and we see Brooke answer, And so Jordan, the trainees, are literally standing there when Brooke gets this call.
Okay.
And Jordan immediately hears screaming, so she puts on another headset. So she's a headset, she's listening, and Brooke is handling the call. And Brooke immediately says there's no location. It's not geolocating. Versus most cell phones, you could start geolocating, right, at least generally the area.
Yes.
And Jordan says, okay, to the trainees, okay, when this happens, it's because it's a prepaid phone call, like a prepaid phone. So there's no GPS. So start gathering information. Ask her name. She says, you know, Brooke starts talking. It's Casey. And Brooke tells her, we can't trace your phone call. And Jordan says, don't fucking tell her that. Like, she doesn't need to know that. Like, she's already panicked. It's like, oh, we can't trace you. She doesn't need to know. That's on us to figure it out, right? But then Brooke starts freaking out and she says to Jordan, what should I do? And Jordan says, stand up and get out of the way. I got this. Again, this is going to have to be Jordan's like redemption moment. Yeah. Like she knows that this is on her. Maddie, the boss, comes over to watch. And Jordan even starts to wig out when Casey's like panicking and screaming. And Maddie sees her hyperventilating. Maddie says, breathe. You got this. We hear Casey ask Jordan, promise me you'll find me. And Jordan says, I promise you this. We have the best team in the city looking for you. She's like, I'm not going to promise this girl that. I fucked up that last time.
Yeah.
That girl's dead. Like, I'm not going to promise this poor girl anything. Manny tells Brooke, I'm going to get the EC forms. And basically, we could trace the call, but it's basically tracing the call using, like, the cell phone data.
Yeah.
So it's still using the cell phones versus, like, calling AT&T or, like, T-Mobile. You call, like, the actual... I don't even know how it works. But basically, you're tracing
it through... explaining satellites?
Exactly. No. But it's a more laborious process that they then have to wait for, like, permission to do, basically.
Yes.
And she said, also get the trainees out of here. Jordan starts talking to Casey and says, is there a trunk release lever? It should be glow in the dark. There's no lever. She can't see one if there is. And she starts gathering information about Casey, sort of like, okay, we were at Fashion Plaza downtown. Love Fashion Plaza. That's the name.
Fashion Plaza. I've never wanted to go somewhere more in my life.
Her full name is Casey Wilson. She's a Capricorn. She's like, oh, Capricorns, we're fighters. Okay, I want you to fight. I'm right here with you. I'm a Capricorn too. Ask her to describe the man. And she's like, white. He had sunglasses on, mid-30s. The car is red or maroon, four-door sedan. Jordan switched over to talk to the cops, and Paul and Jake get the call. And Paul says, it's nice to hear your voice again. I'm glad you're back on the call. She switches back over, and Casey freaks out because Raul is calling. And Jordan says, don't answer a call. You're talking to 911. Don't break off this call with me, please.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, don't talk to this older boyfriend.
Yeah. There's nothing that guy could do for you.
He can't help.
And she says, okay, like, can you tell, are you on a freeway or surface roads? And Casey says, well, we're going fast and we're going straight and we're not stopping. So I think we're on the freeway. Also, we live in LA. But she doesn't know which one it is, but like, that makes sense. And Jordan says, does the trunk smell young or old? Like, what is the smell? And she's like, oh, it smells old. Like, I think it's an older car. And she's like, okay, good. That explains, like, there's not a trunk release, but that does mean you could probably kick out the taillights. And so she started, like you said, see if you could punch or kick the taillights out. And Maddie then says, hey, the carrier has a request, but they have to wait for the response to see if we could geolocate the phone. So this process takes hours, basically.
Oh my God.
And so, like, we can't rely on this. And when they do trace it, it could be within a 5-mile radius. And that's the thing, is like, LA is so massive. So it's like, even if you could find the cell phone tower, there are
5 miles is...
thousands of people and like buildings. And like, it would be very difficult without the GPS, but they're going to narrow it down if they can further than that. In the trunk with Casey, there's a bunch of paint supplies, so like paint buckets and then a paint roller. And she's able to get the paint roller and start like knocking out the taillight. And luckily, this fucking psycho driving has his music on so loud he can't hear this girl like screaming and thrashing around the trunk. And she's able to knock the taillight out. And she confirms we're on the freeway. And Jordan says, I need you to stick your arm out and start waving at the cars. Allison, she does, and Jordan announces to the room, I have a PR, waving her arm out of the trunk of the car. Tell me if somebody calls. Marco immediately gets a call, and it's a woman driving behind the red sedan. And she's calling. She's like, I think a child is in the trunk of a car in front of me. I see an arm. So it's like, okay, good. People on highway can then they can use that to geolocate her on that highway.
Yes.
I was like,
where
that's so
are
smart.
You? You know, I'm on the 101, this exit. That's
and
so smart.
And the woman says, we're on the I-70 heading north. And she's able to tell them the license plate number. So that's good. They could already start like, exactly.
Also great.
But unfortunately, when they pull up the owner, it's a little Asian lady. And so like, okay, so he either stole this car or he switched plates. They're able to figure out he switched plates with a different car because the plate is for like a white like Bronco or something. Unfortunately, because things are going well, they're getting information. The woman calling in does have to blow it. She basically like takes it on herself. She's like, I'm going to drive alongside him and get a description of the guy. They're like, ma'am, do not let him know that you know. Do not do that. He's a suspect in a kidnapping. Of course, this woman drives up next to the guy. He sees her. She's obviously on the phone to 911, like looking at him.
Like describing him
to... in real time to 911. He's also a total psycho, so he knows. He's like paranoid.
Yeah.
He jerks the wheel, veers in front of her car off the exit ramp onto Fernando Boulevard. And everyone in the hive is like, oh, come on. But at least they have a closer location and they have the plates on the car.
Yes.
So the cops...
This is a lesson... Don't be a hero.
Don't be a hero. Because you're not
Don't
going
be a hero.
To be.
Just do whatever the professionals are telling you if you ever find yourself in a scenario where you're being helpful. Just keep being helpful. Don't be a hero.
We all love to be a hero, but this is the kind of thing where, like, absolutely you're None making this a ton worse, right?
Yes.
But that means the cops can track them down. And this is where I'm like, oh, no, is Paul going to die? Because if Paul and Jake are the closest cops, then they are going to have to interact with this guy. Jordan says to Casey, like, what else is in the trunk? Like, what else can you find? Again, we have two paint cans, a brush, a bottle of bleach, a screwdriver, and Casey bursts into tears. And Jordan says, what is there? What are you reacting to? And Casey said, he's going to bury me. There's a shovel in the trunk. And Jordan says, he's not going to bury you. Now, of course, he is going to bury her. That's the obvious 100%. Plan. Because, again, we haven't established this, but we know this is the same guy who killed the teen girl 6 months ago. Bitch, you are going to be in a shallow grave. That's where this is going to end for you, unless Jordan can figure out a way to prevent this. And they have some fun back and forth. Like, Jordan's trying to, like, calm her down. She's like, what's your favorite movie? And Casey says, Bridesmaids. And Jordan's like, I love that movie. I've seen it, like, 100 times. And now they're talking about Bridesmaids, which I thought was really fun.
Cute.
And Jordan says, let's make a deal, okay? When we're gonna get through this, and when we do, we're gonna go to the movies after this. I'm gonna buy you whatever candy you want. And Casey's sort of like laughing, you know?
Yeah.
And she tells Casey, see if you can get one of the paint cans open and see if you can dump it out the taillight opening onto the road. Because one,
smart.
Then you'll have like a trail of paint, but also like the paint will splatter in a way that like other drivers will be able to see. So like, again, another visual thing, and then there'll be paint on the trunk for the cops to see. Again, very smart. And so luckily she's able to, of course she spills paint everywhere, but she's able to start pouring it out. And because the killer is now driving on surface roads, he has to stop at a stoplight. And when he does, Alan, another driver, pulls up alongside him. He's played by Michael Imperioli. Love to see him.
Love to see him.
He like waves him to roll down the window. He's like, oh, I think there's paint spilling out of your trunk. But he's just thinking like, oh, something disastrous is happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now there's paint dumping out. You're in some sort of rear-ended or something. But the guy, of course, is so abnormal that he can't. Like, we see him stifle his reaction. It's like, thanks. But he's obviously something's wrong.
Yeah.
And Alan sees that. So it's not like a normal, like, oh, damn, like, fuck my paint.
Like, great.
And the guy keeps, like, clicking his teeth together, which is very scary. Like, he's, like, staring straight ahead, like, da, 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 da. And so it's like, Alan, this is not his first day on the planet. Alan's like, okay, so that's not good. But as soon as the light turns, instead of the killer is in the left turn lane, he goes straight through the intersection. And Casey's phone flies off and it falls into the paint and starts to cut out. Allison, the kidnapper, pulls over and gets out of the car.
No.
And I'm going to ask you, what would you do again for Casey?
Okay.
Because this is where I'm like, oh no. He pulls over basically under... Like, there's a lot of industrial areas outside LA, so it's, like, under the highway near, like, a shipping yard. So there's not, like, there's a ton of people out and about. The kidnapper pulls over and gets out of the car. Allison, what would you do now?
What would you do?
I mean, if he opens the trunk, I'm, like, immediately, like, prepared to kick him in the balls and, like, push, like, knock him backwards. And then I am going to assume I can run for it and just run in any direction that seems like this, like I, you know, young 16-year-old me, like, could run.
Yeah. Yeah, you just got to put distance between this guy and you got to fight him. Again, once you're already in the trunk, it's almost like it gives you a level of clarity, right? Like, if you're just talking to this guy, and again, obviously, as women, like, we're socialized to be, like, appeasing to all men. That's part of it. But it's like, you already know that this guy's got you in a trunk. Do whatever you need to do. You know, like, that's your only option.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
So she starts screaming. The guy, he opens the trunk, and luckily Casey's able to grab a screwdriver and, like, sort of, like, stabs it as he opens the trunk. Of course, the killer is insane and much bigger than her. He grabs it from her and he presses a screwdriver into her cheek and he says, "Shut up or I'm gonna kill you right here." He hears his mistake. He kept his chloroform in the actual car. If it had been the trunk, he goes to go get the chloroform when suddenly somebody says from behind her, "Are you okay?" He turns around. It's Alan, Michael Imperioli.
Love it.
And he's able to hide the screwdriver and the chloroform. And he sort of, like, moves around. So he's in front of the open trunk, but Alan is sort of, like, far enough away that he can't see into the trunk, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And the killer sort of leans down and the killer presses the screwdriver into Casey's cheek so she doesn't scream. And so Alan can see that something is weird, but, like, he can't exactly, like, understand what's going on.
But, like, what? Yeah.
And the guy's like, "Oh, yep, totally fine. Just my pain. Thanks for telling me. But I'm good." Alan says, "Oh, okay." But when he goes back to his car, he doesn't know enough, but he's like, he just calls 911. He's like, "Something's going on. I could tell. I'm not sure.
That's all you can do.
Unfortunately, as soon as Alan, we see him in the driver's side, he picks up his phone, calls 911. The killer smashes in his driver's side window.
Oh.
And starts fighting Alan in the street. Alan's able to get out of a car and start running. Unfortunately, the killer grabs the shovel out of his fucking trunk and knocks Alan out unconscious. And then we see the killer, like, screaming, "Fuck." It's like, what was your plan?
Yeah, this guy... See, like, it feels like he thought out some stuff. Clearly, he had a plan for how to abduct Casey and, like, what he was going to do with her. But, like, his on-the-fly decisions are all over the place.
Questionable at best. Alan, of course, wakes up and tries to crawl away, and the killer beats him to death with the shovel. It's the middle of the day. Like, anyone could see it.
Oh, my God, Alan.
I know, poor Alan. He tried to help, and this is what you get.
To help.
And in the melee, the killer breaks the bottle of chloroform. So we see the chloroform shatters. He, like, throws the shards on the ground, screaming. Allison, he goes over and starts screaming to Casey. Casey should have run out of the trunk, but she didn't. She's terrified. That's not on her.
Right. Yeah. I mean, watching someone kill someone else, like, I wouldn't be like, now's my chance.
Which is like, well, he's going to beat me to death with that shovel, too. Yeah. And he screams at Casey, "Look what you made me do. He's dead because of you." Allison, the call is still on. Like, it was kind of, like, shorting out because of the paint, but Jordan has heard everything, and Jordan hears Casey scream, and we see, like, Jordan sort of, like, slam her fist on her desk, but she's assuming, "I'm about to hear this girl get murdered over the phone."
Right.
Right? Like, this guy has lost it. He's spiraling, and she's, like, screaming at her boss, "Where is the trace? Why can't they trace?" And Maddie says, "Okay, we got a ping on a tower on Fernando Boulevard." And she's like, "We already know they're on Fernando Boulevard. We need something more specific." And Jordan hears Casey sobbing, "Please don't do this." Luckily, the police helicopter spots the car in the parking lot.
Oh.
And Paul and Jake scream up with the other police. They arrive. Unfortunately, Allison, when they arrive, Casey and the killer are nowhere to be seen. They've abandoned the car. And they find a blood stain on the ground where Alan was beaten to death, but no, Alan's body is also gone. Of course, we see the killer. He has stolen Alan's car, which I assume that he knows, they got my driver's license. They know the car.
Yeah.
So now he's in Alan's car, and he threw Casey and Alan's corpse in the trunk. So now Casey's in a trunk, and there's a corpse on top of her.
No.
But Casey still is not hung up. So she's still on the phone with Jordan. So she's telling her, like, "There's a dead man in the trunk with me. The guy, he said he's going to bury me. I don't know what to do. And again, she has Casey starts describing the trunk again, but it's a newer car, so she can't kick the taillights out. Allison, Alan wakes up. He's not dead. He's just badly injured. He starts screaming because this is his first time in a trunk. So he's panicking. He's thrashing around. Casey's sort of an old hand. And then
she's like, get used to the trunk.
Exactly. He takes out his lighter to try to light it. And like he sees Casey and now they're both screaming. They're like both on the trunk.
It would be terrifying to assume that he's dead and and be in the trunk with him and have him wake up.
It's a great moment. And she's like trying to like, she's like, before when he's unconscious, she's trying to like push his dead body so it's not leaving. Beating on her.
Yeah.
Allison, he lights his lighter to try to like see what's going on. She says, please stop screaming. That killer is out of his fucking mind. Allison, the killer pulls over again and grabs the screwdriver. And that's when Alan sees, I guess like in newer cars, there is a glow in the dark trunk release. So he sees it. He pulls it. Allison, the second the trunk pops up, the killer stabs Alan to death with the screwdriver, like furiously over and over again while Casey screams. And Jordan has to listen to all
Alan.
This. And the killer tells Casey.
Wait, so how is Jordan hearing it if the phone?
The phone like is basically cutting out, but it's still on the line. So she's still able to talk to Casey.
Does Casey have it? Yes. I thought it was like in the other trunk. Okay.
Casey's able to put it in her pocket and like we don't see that exchange, but obviously Casey has pocketed it. He presumed that the phone she dropped in the parking lot, her actual phone, was her phone. So he doesn't know about the burner phone.
That she has the second
and
phone.
And so he hasn't been looking for it. To be fair, it seems like this guy is kind of spiraling. So I think it's like, this guy is not, wouldn't have thought, he's not detail oriented right now. And he stabs Alan to death and he tells Casey, last warning. And he grabs Alan's lighter and then he shoves Casey back, like down into the trunk with Alan's corpse for real and drives on. Back at the crime scene where the other car was abandoned, the sort of the tech crew arrives and they're like, we cannot find a full fingerprint anywhere on this car, only partials, which to them means this guy is a pro. So this guy wiped down everything before he left. And Paul sees the broken chloroform bottle. He says, ooh, okay, he might be a pro, but he's not that smart. So then they take the chloroform glass and they start testing it. Meanwhile, Maddie tells Jordan the police have put on an Amber Alert. So as someone in LA who's constantly getting different alerts to my phone, and I do my best to look around.
Of course.
A lot of them are like Silver Alert where like an old person's wandering around and I'm happy to go look for an old person. That's no problem.
My
if they're
God,
in my area.
Yes.
And Casey tells Jordan on the phone, the guy killed that guy, like that man, and it's all my fault. And it's like, Casey, girl, you don't have to take that on. That's none of this is your fault. That guy stabbed Al to death with a screwdriver because he wanted to. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And Casey says to Jordan, do you record these calls? I want to leave my family a message real quick. Jordan says, you don't need to do that. I you know, like we're going to find you. The police are looking for you. And Casey says, it'll just be a minute. And Casey leaves a message for her mom. She's like, mom, you are always the perfect mother. You gave me everything I ever wanted. And I love you. I love you so much. I'm really sorry. Please don't ever forget me. That's all.
Don't ever forget me. Oh, that's so sad. Oh, my God.
And Jordan says, I promise you, you will see your mother again. So now Jordan's like, I will make a promise to you. Hopefully I can keep it.
Yeah.
She then says, which again, very smart. Jordan says, I needed to go into that dead man's pocket and find his wallet and find his name. So then we could start looking for information about his car. His name is Alan Donato. They're able to pull up his license plate number and the make and model. So again, at least the car, you know, they're able to figure out what to do. The killer realizes that Alan's car is almost out of gas. So we are basically out of the city. It's shot in Santa Clarita. But if you live in LA, basically far enough out of the city, you start going up into like the hills and then the mountains, right?
Yes.
So they're sort of headed out into the middle of nowhere, basically. Meanwhile, Paul and the cops test the chloroform bottle. They're able to pull up a fingerprint. We see the killer stop at a random gas station. This little interaction. This would be me. I feel like this character is me. So the killer stops at a random gas station. He's in the middle of nowhere. He's paying for his gas. And the gas station attendant's like, oh, do you want to check your fluids? Killer says no. He's like, would you want to wash your windshield wipers? He's like, no, I don't need to do anything. He's like, I'll wash your windshield. And the guy's like, please leave me alone. But this guy is like, I'm a gas station attendant in the middle of nowhere. I'm going to try to do this.
Yeah, I need to talk to somebody.
Allison just then is there sort of haggling. Casey realizes that she can push down the center console and crawl into the back seat, which a lot of cars have that too. The middle console comes down. So she's able to crawl halfway out and she's trying to wave to the gas station attendant who's like taking out like windshield wiper fluid or whatever, unboxing stuff. Allison, the killer, just then looks into the gas station, and on the TV is an amber alert for Casey. And we see the gas station attendant look up at the same time and see it. And the gas station attendant turns and sees Casey in the car. And luckily, he has a box cutter.
Okay.
So he tells the killer, get away from the car. What's going on? Who's that girl? Allison, he goes around the car to open the door to try to help Casey out. And the killer pulls the gas nozzle out of the gas, out of the pump, sprays this gas station attendant with gas, and then flicks Allison's lighter and throws it on the guy, who goes up in a ball of flames.
Oh my God.
So this poor bastard who was just trying to do his job is now, and then try to save this girl, is consumed in flames. Allison,
also, you don't think that that's going to be like something that the police find evidence? Out about quickly and then go pursue? Like,
yeah.
I get that they're not going to be able to question this guy. He is gone, I'm sure. But like, you're leaving big marks of where you've been.
Big time, yes. Allison, meanwhile, back at the crime scene, the cops find a print and they can finally ID the killer, Michael Lewis Foster. No record. There was an arson charge in 1995. We would have been really young, but he was cleared. He was never like went to trial or anything. Allison, they're able to get his home address and the cops show up to it. And they bust into his house and they find his wife and two young children. And that really bummed me out, where it's like, oh, I was hoping he was some sort of creepy loner, but
no, it's kind of like often that, like, I even think about, like, I have a lot of friends who, like, if women and non-binary and trans people online who are, like, aggressively, like, bought, like harassed by men, they'll always go and they're like, it's always father, you know, husband, three kids, you know, all that. It's always just like,
yeah,
a regular seeming family man who's just like out here being an absolute bag of shit.
Yeah. And I will say, the many of I've seen, it's also like a father of two, married man, has like the cross and like a Bible quote. And it's like,
always,
boy, you know, to live a world so live a life so unexamined.
Yes.
Devastating. So they bust in, they find his wife and his kids. She's like, she of course is in total denial about anything, and they're like, do you know where your husband is? She says, he's a med tech, he works downtown, what is this about? And Officer Jake says, you aren't going to want us to tell you in front of your kids, so if we could step aside. Meanwhile, Paul and the other officers go upstairs into Michael's office, and inside Michael's office he has, you guessed it, some sort of, basically a creepy serial killer shrine to his dead sister, who, like the two victims we've seen, is a young blonde white woman. Allison, we also, Paul opens a ballerina music box, which creepily turns. So I think we're sort of to understand that this is related to his dead sister.
Yes.
Which does make it closer to sort of a classic horror movie slasher. In fact, it's grounded in anything.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Jordan's communicating with Paul and saying, I have the PR on the line, but she's not responding right now. We see Michael arrive at a place in the middle of nowhere, and we sort of see sort of like toys line up on the window, but we don't know where it is. But we presume from seeing those toys, this must be his childhood home, right? Unfortunately, Allison, finally, when he takes Casey out of the trunk, he finds the prepaid phone and he puts it to his ear. And Jordan tells them, the police know who you are, Michael Foster. They're at your house with your family. And I was like, why would you tell him that? He's going to just kill her and then kill himself. I was like, right. Jordan, this feels like another swing and a miss.
He's not going to be like, oh, I'll bring her back if that's the case.
Yeah.
Like, and like, you can't be like, and they're going to kill your family if you don't bring that. Like, you can't do that either, because like, this man does not, like,
he's beyond off the pale. Michael says, who is this? And Jordan says, this is 911 emergency services. And she says, do not hurt that little girl, Michael. You don't have to do this. And Michael replies,
it's already done.
No.
And that's when, of course, he hangs up and she realizes, oh, this is the same motherfucker that I talked to 6 months ago when that girl, Leia, died. And she screams to everyone, Michael Foster is the same man who killed Leia Thompson. And they're like, are you sure? She's like, I don't, 100%, I spoke to that man and I know that it's him. The cops go through the Foster's house, try to look for evidence, and sees photos of young Michael with his teen sister outside of a house with a porch on it in the middle of nowhere. And they go to Michael's wife. And again, Michael's wife was like, my Michael? How would he ever do such a thing? And they tell her, do you have a second house? He's like, there's no house.
Right.
And then he shows her the framed photo and says, where is this house? She says, that's the house Michael grew up in. it doesn't exist anymore. It burned down years ago. We know there was an arson charge where he burned down his, you know, ostensibly this is his home that he burned down. And she says, but that burned down years ago. And then there's like a red cabin in the background, like on the property. And they say, what about this cabin? And Michael's wife goes, oh, yeah, we own that. Michael's been renovating for years. Girl.
That is not the right, like, you answered wrong first.
But also, to her credit, when she says that, we see in her face, she goes, oh. So it's like, oh, well, he couldn't do such a thing. Well, he does have that cabin he's constantly renovating, and he spends a lot of time there, and I don't know what he does.
I don't really go there. Yeah.
And they tell her, tell us where this is. You know you don't want this girl to die. Allison, she refuses to tell them where the cabin is. I'm sorry. If somebody comes to tell me my spouse is essentially a serial kidnapper and murderer, I'm going to tell them where the cabin is. Like, and same
I'm
with
gonna tell
me.
Them everything I know.
Like, if I if I have a wife and they ask her that, like, when it comes to serial killing, I think you kind of have to be a little more upfront, but
you do.
That's just me. Paul thinks to run the plate for the pickup truck in the photo, which obviously it's from, you know, 20 years ago, but it's registered to an address for under Melinda Foster, ostensibly Michael's mother, and it's in Santa Clarita Hills. And so, like, okay, we just have to go there. They're able to track it, and Jordan tells Paul, this is the man who killed Leah Thompson. I'm sure of it, so please be careful. Allison, night falls, and a SWAT team descends on the cabin. It's empty. And we see Jordan go in the other room and Maddie follow her. And she's like, and Jordan says, like, I fucked up. I said his name. I scared him. If they're not there, I don't know what are we supposed to do? He's probably killed her. He's probably killed himself. And Maddie says, I don't think you can blame yourself. He found the cell phone. He was going to sever the call anyway. So he was going to disconnect. Like, you, that part was out of your hands. And Jordan says, but they did, finally, when the trace comes through, he was going to the cabin. So, like, what the information they had was right. So he is in that area. And it's like, well, I'm glad they found the trace right in time for him to hang up the fucking phone. But at least it confirms, like, their suspicions he was there. And Melinda says, you handled it the exact right way, and I want you to go home. And Jordan's like, go home?
What are you talking
about? It's in the police's hands now. Like, you know that we step away. They have the information. I know you want closure. You're not going to get it. And Jordan's like, oh, damn, okay. Allison, unfortunately, Casey wakes up in a filthy, looks like a filthy medical facility that is saw-level disgusting. It's clearly some sort of basement. And Michael is strapped her to, like, a dentist chair.
No.
Where they could, like, take up and down. And he gasses her before cutting off her shirt and washing her hair. And this part was genuinely scary. Like, this actor who played the killer, hang on, Michael Eklund. I was like, ooh, Michael Eklund is terrifying in this. Oh, it's so funny. Michael Eklund is from Wikipedia. Michael Eklund is a Canadian television and film actor. He's known for playing the role of the villain or the antihero. His characters are often described as being creepy. He's killing it because, like, he does look like a normal white man, but, like, then, like, he pulls himself into this creepy vibe. He did a great job. Now she's in her bra, her hair's wet, he's washing her hair and fills the sink with water and is washing her hair.
Ugh.
And when he goes to get the hair dryer, she gets one of her hands free and is able to grab hairspray and spray the killer, Michael, in the face. And he screams, and when he falls, he basically does like a back somersault and he knocks over his tray of surgical implements that he has ready, Allison. Casey's able to get free. She runs down the hallway and into another room in this sort of like basement bunker that he has built. When she turns to see what's in the room, Allison, she goes to scream and Michael calls through the door and says, oh, you're not going to want to see that, huh? He opens the door and he grabs Casey and we see them both staring into the room and we don't see what it is. And he says, I told you, you didn't want to see it. Allison, who will survive this film?
Who will survive?
I think that it's gonna all work out and Casey's gonna survive and Jordan's gonna survive and Michael's gonna die, and perhaps if like police descend on him, we see like one more like a police officer go down in a melee.
Okay.
But like I think that ultimately he will die and our gals will survive.
All right, great. Now how do you think Michael's going to die?
I think he's almost going to get away with it, but cops are going to show up and shoot him in the chest.
Okay, great.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. Tender, juicy, and its own sauce. Would you look at that? Well, you can't see it, but trust me, it looks delicious. New McCrispy strips, now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
So back at the Hive, Jordan obviously doesn't go home, and she's listening through the hour and a half call with Casey, trying to find like different details. Like maybe she missed something. And she listens to the end of the call when Michael's telling her it's already done. And she could hear in the background like a light rhythmic, like metallic clanging. And she's like, what is that sound? Like, is that sound like I could use that to find out, you know,
where they are,
where they are. The cops, which again, I thought was smart, set up a checkpoint into his neighborhood. So if he tries to go home, they'll catch him. But of course, he's not going to do that. He's has other plans in mind. Yep. You know, Paul calls to check on Jordan again to console her, like, you were an all-star. You did better than any of us could have done. Please let yourself rest. She says she will, but she won't, Allison. Allison, she then drives to the last known place Michael was headed, the cabin. She goes alone. She goes at night. And she goes without telling her coworkers at 9-1 nor her police officer boyfriend. You hate to see it, Allison. Girl, just at least tell your boss, or like, maybe not your boss. Tell somebody. You know what I mean? Yes. Tell one person just so they know. And she goes and she arrives at the cabin and they aren't there. But she starts going through the stuff in the cabin. We see like boxes of toys, home repair stuff. Like he was repairing the cabin for like his family to go to.
Yeah.
She finds a framed photo of Michael's sister who again looks, I don't know if they're using a photo of Abigail Breslin or just another girl who looks exactly like her, but clearly he
like her.
Yeah, saw her, looks like his sister. Allison, she starts flipping through a photo album and we see a photo of his sister in a hospital bed with losing her hair. Obviously, she has cancer. And we see throughout the photo album, the sister gets sicker and sicker. And Michael in the photo, he must be like 12. Like he's like a kid himself. Maybe he's like 11, right? And she's like 16. Allison, she flips the next photo and it's Michael kissing his very unwell sister on the mouth. Which I think is both uh-oh, but then also I think the larger uh-oh, which is who's taking these photos? Obviously a parent. And I like that they don't really explain it. We just like know he has an arson charge. We know that his childhood home burned down. I think like his mother's like involved encouraging this, creating like whatever's going on in this house obviously is what drove him insane. And it intimates a horrifying situation that doesn't make me like empathize with him, but I'm also like, oh well, yeah, this guy stood no chance, like whatever was happening in this house, like of course he's insane and this makes sense, right? Allison, she goes outside and in the distance she hears the metallic clanging and she finds it a flagpole with an American flag billowing in the wind, but she looks around, she can't find anything until she steps on something. It's the broken prepaid cell phone that he threw to the ground, and when she looks down, it's on top of a wooden trap door in the ground. She pulls it open and looks down. There's a ladder into a darkness. There's like an underground bunker on the property. And this
call someone else.
She takes out her phone. Because of course you're like, call 911. Allison, she bobbles her cell phone and it falls down the hole into the bunker. Fortunately, she has a flashlight, but she does have to climb down into the pit to retrieve it. She climbs down the ladder. Of course, there's no signal down in there. And she hears Casey sobbing in the distance. And Michael's like coughing really hard. Allison, she slips into a room. And when she turns her flashlight, we see her reaction to the room that they were in. The room that we have not seen what it is. And Michael barges into this room. And she's forced to hide behind like the open door of like a wardrobe. Allison, he flips on the light and we see that it is a little girl's room, a replica ostensibly of his sister's room. We see like mannequin heads with blonde wigs and then the pink bedding and the wall is sprayed with blood. So the blood, like the bed is covered in blood and then there's almost like a bloody handprint streak down the wallpaper. obviously he killed Leia, and perhaps other girls as well. And in this makeshift bedroom where I guess he's like killing his killing his sister or like fucking his dying sister or God knows what. And Michael looks at it, and again, to this actor's credit, he's looking crazier and crazier. Like, the first time we see him, it's like he's semi-normal, and he's just, like, sweating, and his, like, eyes are all over. He's like, he's standing in front of the vanity. And obviously, I think, like, the wigs are supposed to be, like, from his sister's chemo.
Yeah.
And we see him put his ring finger in his mouth and suck off his own wedding ring.
Okay.
I guess, like, he, to, like, delineate the self or whatever. Yes. And he takes the mannequin head, and he starts, like, talking to it. And he's, like, petting the wig. Allison, when he takes the wig off, we see it's not a wig. It's a full scalp with hair sitting on a mannequin head. And of course, he smells the wig and he lays down the bed. I'm like, oh, is he going to jerk off with the scalped wig?
No.
Instead, what he sees, there's a blue streak in the hair, and we have flashback, and it was Leia's hair. Leia had like, just, you know what I mean? Like, as anyone would do, like a little, like, fun little blue streak.
Little streak.
And it's like that, like, snaps him out of it because it's like a sign that that's not his sister.
It's not his, yeah.
And he said, no, no. And he like throws it aside. But during all this, Jordan is literally standing behind this wardrobe and he's like smelling this wig like 12 inches from her. And she's begging that hopefully he doesn't find her. Allison, he opens a mini fridge in the room and he throws it in. We see it's filled with like 5 other scalps. So he's been killing whatever missing women are in, I'm assuming, the tri-state area. He took them.
Yeah.
So he's a serial killer. And again, we see this. He goes back to the wardrobe and he's smelling all of his ostensibly sister's clothes while she's standing there. Luckily, he just needed to go smell all these scalps and stuff. And he's done. So he goes, he shuts out the light, leaving her in the room. Paul's leaving Jordan a voicemail, be like, bitch, where are you? What is happening? We found the car and we found Al Donato's body, but like they just abandoned the car somewhere. So like the car is in a different area.
Yeah.
We see Michael go check on Casey, who now has a shower cap on her head because he's about to scalp her. And unfortunately, he turns on the gas, this nitrous oxide, and she says to him, please just kill me. Because she's saying, please don't scalp me and rape me. Like, I just, like, just kill me already.
Kill me first, and then whatever you're going to do after. But, like, I don't want to be alive for this part.
And she says, why won't you just kill me? And he takes a scalpel, and we see he's drawn, like, you know, sort of a surgical marker line on her scalp. And he says,
there needs a healthy blood flow. If you're dead, then it dies too.
And Michael says, I'm sorry. I can't stop. And he sinks the scalpel into her forehead and starts cutting off her scalp.
No.
And fortunately, with a scream, Jordan bashes him in the head with a mannequin head, which is like plastered, and smashes to the ground. And she, luckily, it knocks him out. She runs to Casey. She pulls off the gas and she starts cutting through her ties, or like zip ties. She said, it's going to be okay. And Casey's like, oh my God, you're the 911 operator. It's Jordan.
That would be wild if you're Casey to be like, wait, we were on the phone all day. You are the person who comes.
Unfortunately, Michael leaps up, tackles Jordan, and then they're just brawling in this like saw level, like disgusting medical facility he's set up. And the sink is still full of water from washing Casey's hair. And he grabs Jordan, he puts her head under the water. And we see Jordan starts to pass out. Jordan hears Michael scream. And when she's able to jerk her head up, we see that Casey is up. She's out of the chair and she has slashed him across the face with a scalpel.
Yes.
The ladies are able to run back to the ladder and Casey's able to get up and escape. Of course, Jordan is behind her and Michael's able to grab Jordan by the legs and starts dragging her down. Kicks him in the face. She escapes and he climbs out after them. He starts off after Jordan when he suddenly stops dead and he turns and we see that Casey has stabbed him in the back with a pair of surgical scissors that she grabbed during the brawl.
Yes. Way to go, Casey. You really did a good job.
And he yanks out the scissors and he's about to stab Casey in return. But before he has a chance, Jordan shoves him back into the hole, into the bunker. And he falls, but he's able to like grab the ledge before he drops. And Casey kicks him square in the face, knocking him down the ladder to the concrete floor below. And we get this incredible shot. This is why the movie happened. Up from the hole of Halle Berry, and there's a waving American flag at night behind her. It's such a fun shot.
I love that.
And luckily, Jordan takes out her phone and it did survive the fall. So she calls, you better fucking believe it, 911.
Yeah.
But then she stops when Casey says, wait. Allison, we see Michael wake up in the dentist chair in the basement. He is now tied down. Turnabout is fair play. And Jordan says, you should have listened to me, Michael Foster. You should have turned yourself in when you had the chance. He says, oh, you're the 911 operator. I thought you'd be taller. And he sort of like laughs in their faces like, oh, you got me. So when are the police getting here? And Casey says,
I escaped. Jordan found me in the woods. You disappeared.
Allison, they turn and they walk out. And he screams, you're just an operator. You can't do this. And Jordan turns back to him and says, it's already done. And she closes the door. And he screams, wait. And in total darkness, he hears the lock click. And the credits begin to roll. The call.
What a good ending.
I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, so girls. Fun. Allison, what are some fatal mistakes you think that were made in the call?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, obviously Jordan like had a human error moment in that first call, and like that did like propel her to like need to get involved in this one in a way where I'm like, yes, that was a fatal mistake for like Leia, which is obviously awful, but like it is why she was able to save Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Casey nailed it the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, everyone, they did. She did more than most. She did yes. as well as anyone possibly could have. Yeah. Jordan, it's hard because like I love her. I think I she did her. The best. She did do some goof 'em ups and luckily redeemed herself in the end. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then Michael, even, I feel like it's like, I do empathize with Michael. It's like, wherever, however he was raised was real bad. And yeah. so obviously you can't be kidnapping women and stealing their scalps and then murdering them because of your dead yeah. sister. But you kind of almost like, oh yeah, no, this guy was yeah. born. He was like raised to be incredibly fucked up.
Right.
And so it's almost like he that wasn't a mistake. His mistake was being born into that family, I suppose.
Right, yes. I think Alan, you know, he tried. He was kind of up against Alan. Something he didn't realize
yeah, he
was
didn't
the
know.
Case.
He didn't know.
And, you know, the lady who drove up next to him and phoned in that, like,
yeah,
I mean.
That was the biggest mistake.
That was the biggest mistake. That kind of put us on the path of all of these other horrible problems. So,
yeah.
I, you know, for the most part, everybody doing their best, you know, and way to go, Casey, girl, you're a survivor.
And then finally, where would you place the call of the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I would give this, I think this is a 4 as it's mostly thriller. Like it's mostly just like, are they going to get away with it? But like the like lighting a man on fire at a gas station is very scary. Being trapped with a body in a trunk is very scary. And then once we get into the medical facility, like that is horror.
Yeah.
But I would say most of it is like a what's going to happen thriller. So for me, that's a 4. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 3, which is higher than you might think. But I really, once you find out like the more about this guy's background, that really freaked
yeah.
me out. And
yeah.
I think like he's just, the genuinely performances were great. The idea of being stuck in a trunk as someone with, wouldn't say I'm necessarily claustrophobic, but certainly have an element of that. That really did
yes.
freak me out. And then eventually obviously becomes like a traditional Halle Berry kicks ass thriller by the end, which is less scary to me. But I don't know, there were certain elements of it that really got me, and I think they were playing it pretty realistic. I think that's probably why
yeah.
it affected me
yeah.
more than it would have. And but yeah, and I do think like this is something like if you're someone who like can watch horror movies but can't watch like certain horror movies, I feel like most people could watch this. But
this
I don't know. There
Silence
are
of the
moments.
Lambs
yes.
adjacent.
Yes. Yeah, more of a thriller. So if you can watch a thriller, you should be totally fine. If the elements we've said don't seem like something you can watch, well, I trust your judgment.
Well, skip it and you listen to this.
Yeah, but congratulations to Halle Berry. Another award-winning turn, if you ask me.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And thank you so much for listening, everybody. And until next time.
Please.
Please.
Keep it spooky.
Bye.
Bye.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Ruin Podcast, or join us at patreon.com/ruinpodcast for exclusive episodes and video content. Ruin is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Dan Powell, and Houston Snyder.
Recorded and edited by Sage Spielman.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.